This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Noelle Lim. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic and circuit breaker, Singapore's economy entered a technical recession after shrinking by 41% in the second quarter compared to the previous quarter. Like in many countries, one of its most badly hit sectors is tourism and hospitality. In the first quarter of this year, tourism receipts and number of international visitors fell by about 40% year-on-year to $4 billion and 2.7 million people, respectively. We speak with Keith Tan, the chief executive of the Singapore Tourism Board, on what's in store. It's been a challenging year, but the current situation could bring to light previously overlooked opportunities. How has the new normal changed your strategy for the next 12 months?
We're still all trying to figure out what the new normal is in the tourism sector and in many aspects of the economy. There have been a number of changes that we are putting in place, or which we will put in place, which I think are relevant for whatever future, whatever new normal will emerge. One is the trend of digital capabilities and virtual capabilities. The tourism sector in general has lagged behind many other sectors of the economy in adopting digital or virtual solutions. And in Singapore, I think that's partly because in previous years, when we've been receiving record and increasing number of visitors every year, there's just very little bandwidth left over from our tourism stakeholders to invest in and develop new sorts of capabilities. Now we see this as a golden opportunity. They have built new capabilities in using virtual reality and other digital means to reach out to audiences all over the world. So, for example, we just finished up our Singapore Food Festival, which has always been a physical event. This year, we had to pivot it towards a digital event. And this was great because the online buzz was very positive. We were able to reach a larger audience, both in Singapore and outside Singapore, using live online master classes with our local and award-winning chefs. We had virtual food tours. We provided limited edition food bundles. And then we were able to extend this to an international audience, whereas in the past, we couldn't. And the other aspect is cleanliness and sanitization. We are accelerating efforts to really upgrade the level of cleanliness, the commitment to cleanliness, sanitization, hygiene standards across our entire economy and the tourism sector through our national SG Clean campaign.
In the past, STB has worked out some partnerships, for example, with Alibaba, with Alipay, also Tencent, WeChat. And what other partnerships might you be looking into, especially in the digital space?
I won't make any pronouncements over the sorts of partnerships we're entering. Now, obviously, we can't do it in a way that encourages them to travel to Singapore, but we certainly would encourage and welcome ideas and partnerships from others who can help us to expand the mindshare and the reach of Singapore.
Virtual aside, there are still hotel rooms to be filled up. Vacations is becoming the buzzword. What about other areas like education, tourism, maybe even remote working visas like what Estonia is doing, maybe even second home visas like for people from Hong Kong? I'm wondering whether there are like some thoughts about moving in that kind of direction.
Not quite yet, because many of those policies would go beyond tourism. Really, those are the realm of our immigration authorities. Right now, I think our preoccupation and our priority remains health infection controls. So that will still remain the fundamental guiding principle behind the way we think about our border controls and how we let in visitors.
Speaking about staycations, I mean, what sort of innovative ideas might you be looking at?
I know it's a very popular phrase and it makes sense. What we are trying to promote is the idea of a Singapoliday, and we are encouraging and getting partners in the tourism industry to bundle together, to work together, to create great products, joint products. So imagine a hotel stay in Little India bundled together with a local walking tour, with a hands-on workshop, and with a meal experience at one of the restaurants in Little India that may be difficult for you to do if you were to do it just by yourself. So we're trying to bundle all these together to help Singaporeans to discover, to rediscover different precincts, different aspects of Singapore that they may not have experienced in a long time, in a holistic way. Not just the hotel, not just the spa and the pool of the hotel, but the precinct around which the hotel is situated.
So now there are staycations or sailing staycations, and you don't just have to look at your mainland. There's also Sentosa Ubin and also Pulau Hantu. Are you looking into broadening your reach to some of these islands?
Oh, definitely. I mean, they're all part of our campaign. So Sentosa is a major partner in our Singapore Rediscovers domestic tourism campaign, and they have been very active in promoting local visits to Sentosa. Ubin is a bit more accessible than some of the southern islands, and we are working together with stakeholders in the eastern precincts of Singapore to develop itineraries and ideas for what to do in the eastern part of Singapore, including Ubin. Southern Islands is a little bit more challenging because of accessibility, but there are already some operators who have offered, who have started to step up their offerings on day-long excursions to the Southern Islands. And I think we would certainly welcome that as well. But we, for the Southern Islands, because of the natural landscape there, we do have to be a bit more careful about the impact of visitorship on the islands.
Yeah, the environmental concerns, yeah. Right? Yeah, in August, your government announced it will set aside about 320 million Sing dollars or about 1 billion ringgit for tourism credits or vouchers to get Singaporeans to know their country better. Could you give us a taste of how these vouchers might work?
Well, we're still developing the details, and the details will be announced by the Minister for Trade and Industry in a few weeks' time. Essentially, it boils down to what many other countries have been doing, which is to incentivize locals to go spend their holiday in Singapore. But we're still defining what the precise terms of the overall campaign and the packages will be and how we will deliver them. So sit tight and we'll have more details in a few weeks' time.
One low-hanging fruit is getting residents in Malaysia to visit Singapore. Although in terms of tourism receipts, we're number 7 contributor in your country. When do you foresee 100% border opening between Malaysia and Singapore?
We had 1.22 million international visitor arrivals from Malaysia last year. So Malaysia was number 4. So Malaysia is a significant market for us. And we do see lots of possibilities in terms of opening up more to Malaysia. One of the main concerns for us in the government is opening up in a safe way to other countries which have gotten their health infection situations under control. I think Malaysia has done a good job in getting the health infection situation under control. And hence, we've been able to move on a few things like the reciprocal green lane and the periodic commuting arrangements with Malaysia. And I'm hopeful that we can expand those to more types of visitors in the future.
Do you think maybe by end of this year, assuming that Malaysia keeps it under fairly well controlled like now?
I can't make any judgments on this because I don't make the call, but I'm hopeful that it will happen sooner rather than later.
So what I find interesting is that the Singapore Tourism Board also has enforcement powers. What are some challenges getting restaurants and bars to comply with the SOPs?
Well, I think one of the challenges is for them to understand all the different rules. So we are trying very hard and working with the Restaurant Association of Singapore and working with our fellow government agencies involved in this effort to make the rules as easy to understand as possible. So groups of 5, tables at least 1 meter apart, music to be no more than 60 decibels. Second challenge is communicating and disseminating the information to everybody. And the third aspect really then is once they get the information, it's getting them to play ball. And it's not easy, especially if they have difficult customers. So it's a two-way game. Our concern is that locals are getting a bit complacent with the safe management measures in place. So we will need to continue to push to make sure that everybody abides by our safe management measures. Because if you observe the patterns in other countries where second or even third waves have occurred again, that a lot of it traces back to people not abiding by health safety measures in place, whether it's in F&B or in bars or other places.
How are you nudging people to comply?
we are thinking of how we can encourage it through softer ways, through behavioral shifts, through mass media, to normalize behavior, normalize the idea of you should be wearing masks at all times outside, for example. You should be speaking softly when you are at a restaurant.
Why is sound level and music decibels important?
There is scientific evidence that indicates that if you speak louder, you expel, right? You expel more droplets. Yes. So that creates more risk of infection.
I'm joined by Keith Tan, Chief Executive of Singapore Tourism Board. After this, we'll discuss how Singapore, in the pre-COVID-19 years, has managed to get international visitors to spend more than in Malaysia, and what has been the impact of the movie Crazy Rich Asians on tourism. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. Keith Tan, Chief Executive of Singapore Tourism Board, is speaking to us. In 2019, Singapore recorded about 19 million tourists and they spent about 28 billion Sing dollars or 80 billion ringgit plus. On a per capita basis, Singapore brings in more tourist dollars than Malaysia. Apart from higher hotel rates and food cost, what would you say is Singapore's formula in attracting so many tourists and getting them to spend?
We've pursued a strategy of quality tourism for a few years already. So targeting our efforts towards higher yield tourists. So for example, making a big push on MICE visitors. Our statistics tell us that MICE visitors, these are business travelers coming in for meetings, incentive trips, conventions and exhibitions and so on, they tend to spend more than twice the level of a regular leisure visitor. And in fact, this year would have been a very big year for us with a series of major events, all of which have been cancelled or postponed, unfortunately. But we are keen to resume and regrow the MICE business in the future. Then a lot of our other marketing efforts and outreach efforts have been targeting people who are more willing to spend, as I said, the higher yield visitors, whether these are younger professionals from some countries or active silvers in other countries who do have money to spend. So we do take a very targeted effort at identifying who the higher yield segments are and then targeting our marketing efforts towards them.
What about F1 tourists? Where do they sit? Are they also mainly business travelers?
No, there's a whole range. So F1 every year does attract quite a large number of visitors to Singapore just for the race itself. And they come, there's quite a large number coming from further markets like Europe and Australia, and also obviously quite a large number from the region too. And many of them come just for the event. So they're not really business visitors. They come for the weekend. They come to watch the race, for the concerts, for the F&B, and then they fly back home after that. So a large chunk of the F1 visitors would not be business visitors. They're here for the race as leisure visitors. It does attract business visitors because a lot of companies in Singapore use the F1 race as an opportunity to bring in their clients, their business partners to entertain them as well. So we do get some, and those are very high value to us too.
The movie Crazy Rich Asians. Of course, I have to ask you this. I mean, I'm curious.
We cannot escape it, right?
Yeah, I'm curious whether you track what benefits that movie had yielded for Singapore in terms of tourism.
It's impossible to track the specific and precise impact of a single movie on tourism, but we do know that in the years since then, we have seen very good growth from the US market. US travelers don't usually travel so far all the way to this part of Asia, but we've seen very strong growth over the last 2 years, obviously not this year, but in 2018, 2019, from the US markets. I cannot say this is entirely because of Crazy Rich Asians, because there have been other efforts made, including more airline connectivity, more direct flights from the US to Singapore, which have all been very helpful for us. And we've also had many serious targeted efforts at bringing business visitors and leisure visitors from the US. But certainly, Crazy Rich Asians has given us more legs for marketing and outreach efforts and partnership efforts in the US. So, for example, I believe it was last year, the Botanical Gardens had a flower show devoted to orchids that was patterned after the gardens in Crazy Rich Asians. So Crazy Rich Asians does have very long legs and has helped us to expand our efforts and our outreach.
And I wonder, like, you know, the global tensions between China and US, whether Singapore or at least this part of the region has been a major beneficiary, or maybe more Americans are coming to this part of the world because maybe they're not so keen to go to China.
I think it's still too early to say, and I would hesitate to say that Southeast Asia has or will benefit from US-China tensions. It could well be the other way around as well, that we could end up being a victim of that. I think it is still a bit too early to tell. But I would say that certainly there have been some signs where, and it's not just in tourism, it's in investment, it's in the larger sectors of the economy as well, where I think in Southeast Asia, we have a possibility of winning more investments, more business, more visitors arising from increasing US-China tensions. But I think this is a very difficult opportunity, it's dangerous, and we have to work very carefully to bring the right sorts of companies, the right sorts of visitors to, and the right sorts of events to our region, to Singapore and to Southeast Asia. Not an easy task.
And given so many visa uncertainties now about studying in the US or even in the UK and also Australia, do you foresee Singapore could be a beneficiary of Chinese coming in to study? And of course, the side effect would be, you know, tourism, more tourists from China.
The number of spaces in our universities is a more or less fixed number, right? So we can't expand those numbers rapidly or dramatically. And our first priority in our education sector would still be to our locals here. So I think I don't know for sure. I can't speak for our education ministry, but they will have to make their own determination whether they want to expand in a sizable way to Chinese students.
One of Malaysia's top sources of tourists are from the Middle East. I don't see that in your top 10 list. Why might that be the case? Is it a case of visa restrictions or maybe less halal options?
I don't think it is halal options. There have been some ratings that have rated Singapore as the most halal-friendly non-Muslim majority nation. And obviously, there are many halal and Muslim-friendly options in Singapore. I believe the challenges are with visa restrictions from the Middle East and also less air connectivity. So that has weighed down our numbers from the Middle East.
Is that a market that you want to promote more aggressively?
It is a possibility, but we do have to overcome the visa concerns from our other agencies.
The tourism and hospitality sector is a major employer. And I'm just reading some news reports. Hotels in Singapore have let go of employees. They're mainly foreigners at a certain level. So one, for example, announced that it has reduced its foreign employee dependency by 45%. I suppose they will have to go back to their home country. But I wonder what sort of support SDB or your government is looking to make sure that some of these jobs can be kept.
And actually, it's a new area of effort for us because in the past, the tourism sector has been in the other direction. We need more workers and it's been difficult to find more workers. Now we are in the opposite direction. And this is now a big piece of work for STB, for the agencies under the Ministry of Manpower as well. So whenever we are made aware of a hotel or any other partner in the tourism sector that wants to retrench a sizable number of workers, we quickly swing into action. We work with the relevant unions. We work with Workforce Singapore, which is one of our sister government agencies. And then we discuss the options with whether it's a hotel, let's say hotel. We figure out the numbers, we figure out the jobs that are being made redundant, what skills they have, and we try to put together a package of support. There are still jobs available in other sectors of Singapore in our economy, so we try to do job matching for workers who may be made redundant. So we try to support them as much as we can, especially obviously if they are locals here. Even for those who are not locals, if they have good skills that are relevant for other sectors, we will still try to find good matching jobs for them in other sectors as well.
What is the next best option if you are not able to match the jobs? Like, for example, like if, say, if it's a foreign worker, you know, do you give them the option of going back or just staying on for another 3 months, visa extension?
Many of the foreign workers who have been retrenched have opted to go home. In fact, many of them wanted to go home.
Is it because of cost of living in Singapore?
cost of living is one thing, and I think they also felt that just in the, I guess it's part of a psychological response to the pandemic. They just wanted to go home to their families, whether in China or Malaysia or other countries. So we've seen that as one of their primary options, rather than staying on in Singapore. But where they have had good, difficult to replicate skills, then we try to keep them in Singapore and even at the hotel in some capacity. Because one of our preoccupations is not just preserving jobs and employment. We also want to preserve skills, strategic capabilities and skills. It's one thing to replace a housekeeper. It's quite another thing to replace, a manager who has had 20 years of managing customers from a particular country, who can speak the language of that country. And if you lose that skill, it's very difficult to build up that skill again in the future.
When do you expect the industry will recover in Singapore?
Tourism industry here in Singapore is overwhelmingly dependent on international demand. So long as international travel remains dampened, either because of travel restrictions and quarantine requirements, or even if you lift the travel restrictions and you lift some of the quarantine requirements, but there's still dampened demand because of fear, then I think that would take a long time for the tourism industry to recover.
In terms of tourism receipts, your topmost countries are like China, Indonesia, India, Australia, Japan, mm-hmm. US, UK, all above Malaysia. These countries, especially the US, UK, Indonesia, India, they have a lot of challenges managing the COVID-19 situations. Your tourism industry may take a really long time to actually recover. So where would you say the industry is at now if you're assuming like a U-shaped recovery? Is that a bottom U and it's going to be a long bottom?
I suspect it will be a long winter. We are trying to buy them as much time as possible through a lot of the government budget support efforts. We have told them that they need to prepare themselves for a long winter to be as lean as possible. You're absolutely right. Many of our key markets are either struggling to get their infection situations under control, or they're far away, so their consumers may not wish to travel so far to Singapore, even if the situation improves in their country and in our region. So it will be a challenge for us. I think our strategy moving forward will be to look at country by country where there are opportunities to open up for travel, like with Australia or with China, or with Malaysia. We will move as fast as we can.
If any hotels have to close, like especially the major hotels, will the Singapore government provide any support?
We are not at that situation, and we will do everything in our capability to avoid that situation.
Thank you for speaking with us. I enjoyed our conversation. Keith Tan, Chief Executive of Singapore Tourism Board. I'm Noelle Lim on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.